Well, last week in part one of the series titled All In, I ended with this question. I said, we'd get to the answer of this question in part two. What is the biggest obstacle in your path? And here's the thing we all know about the obstacles in our path, right? The obstacles create tension. The obstacles create some pain. The obstacles create some discomfort, right? We don't enjoy whatever that obstacle is in our path. We just don't enjoy it. And so if you missed part one, or maybe this is the very first time ever taking a step into Tri-County Church, I just want to encourage you, go watch part one of the series, because I think everything we looked at in part one is going to help just as we navigate through part two. And you can always go to tcconline.church. You can go to YouTube, just search Tri-County Church. You can download our app, you can watch it there. Every week we post it on Facebook. I mean, there's so many different ways, but make sure you watch part one. But we led into this question, and if you watch part one, whether online at one of our campuses or maybe during the week, if you watch part one, maybe, just maybe, when I landed on this question, there was another word that kind of crept into your mind. Because here's what we all know: most of the time, the vast majority of the time, attached to the what is a who. If not all the time, right? There's a name or names. We all get that, right? I mean, the attention gets focused on the what, but we know as soon as a name gets attached to the what, right? The name is where the pain comes from, doesn't it? The name is where the discomfort comes from. The name is what keeps us up late at night. The name or the names, right? And so as we make our way today, we're going to discover the answer to this question, the what. Who is the biggest obstacle in your path, in your life right now? And we're going to be looking at a moment of a story about a guy named David. Now, David would become the second king of Israel, but at this point of time, the segment of his life story that we're going to be looking at, he's not king yet. He's going to be king. God's told him he'd be king, but he's not king. The king at this point was the first king of Israel. That guy's name is Saul. And what's interesting, when we think about this moment of David's story, it's just messy. I don't know if you have a messy family story. David has a messy family story. You see, David's best friend is a guy named Jonathan. I mean, they are as close as best friends can be. But here's why it's messy. Jonathan is the oldest son of King Saul. And we all understand, like, the period of the kings, right? When the king died, who became the next king? The oldest son. And now David, who's promised to be the next king, is best friends with the king's oldest son. And here's the thing, Jonathan was really okay with it, because John understood that God had tapped David on the shoulder to be the next king. Well, it gets a mess here. Saul, trying to control David, marries him to one of his daughters, Michal. So not only is David best friends with Saul's oldest son, David's also the son-in-law to King Saul. And King Saul hates David. King Saul is envious. He's jealous. And he's doing everything he can to get rid of David. He tried many different ways to end David's life. And finally, King Saul, he took it upon himself to kill David, which is awkward, especially for family reunions. You know, it's like, hey, dad, you killed my husband, right? That just gets awkward. But Saul doesn't care, because Saul wants to end David's life. So Saul grabs 3,000 of his fierce warriors, and he sets out to kill David. Well, David had a smaller army, about 600 men that were loyal just to David. And David is fleeing for his life. And he goes to this area called En Gedi. And En Gedi, when you break this word down, I mean, they would name things that were just logical. So this first word, En, E-N, stood for spring. En Gedi was for a goat, a kid, right? So this was the spring of the goat, right? Why? Well, it was this desert area around the famous fortress of Masada. It's around this area where they found the Dead Sea Scrolls. And this is this desert land that had huge flat plains, but also mountain ridges filled with caves. And these caves, well, there were springs. And so people could hide out, have fresh water. There's wildlife there, so you could sustain life for quite a bit of time, and it was a great defensive position. You could see people coming from a long way off. So David is hiding out in this region and Gideon. This is where we'll jump into the story. He, meaning King Saul, came to the sheep pens along the way, and the cave was there. And again, understand this area. I've been there before. And when I mean there's caves everywhere, you would stand and you would see caves throughout the mountain ridges. They're everywhere. And they're not small caves. They're massive caves where huge flocks of sheep could go into. It was a natural place where they could keep safe and have shelter. Caves everywhere. And Saul, with his 3,000 men. So think about it. It's just not 3,000 men. It was all the supplies to support what? 3,000 men. All the food to support 3,000 men. All the water to support, right? All the wagons to support. Like everything they needed to keep these 3,000 fighting men, right, in tip-top shape. This is a massive group of people. And they come to this area. And when the king said, stop, what would you do? You would stop. And Saul said, stop, because, well, he had to go potty. Seriously, this is in the Bible, by the way, not potty. They said relieve himself. But think about that. I mean, I just love these moments in the Bible. It's real life moments, right? The king had to go potty. Have you ever been on a road trip before? Yeah. Do you have someone in your family? Do not point to that person. Do you have someone in the family 30 minutes into the road trip that has to go potty? And you're like, really? We just left the house. I do. I have three of them. But I'm not pointing fingers. Right? I mean, this is just real life, right? It's like, oh, Saul. And here's the thing. If you're one of the 3,000 fighting men and you had to go potty, do you think the king was going to pull over the whole thing to wait for you? No. You'd go wherever. But when you're the king, you stop. And so they all stopped to wait for the king. And Saul happens to pick the one cave. The one cave. What are the chances? What are the odds? The one cave that David and the 600 fighting men were hiding in, way in the back. Think about this moment. Saul, I mean, you can't be more vulnerable than this moment when he's going potty, can you? I mean, right? Like, you can't. I mean, maybe there's another scenario that you can be more vulnerable in. I'm just telling you, I mean, this is on the top three vulnerable moments. I mean, the king is going to the restroom, right? Like, I mean, he's just there, right? And I don't know, by the way, I don't know if it was number one or number two. We don't know. I don't know if he grabbed a newspaper. Like, I don't know. I don't know. But he was going to be in there a little bit. So maybe it was number two. Think about the vulnerability of the king. But he has nothing to fear. Just 3,000 men. 3,000 men waiting for him. Who else was going to be in the cave? Who else was going to be in there? And think about David. David's moment. This was David's moment. David knew he was going to be king. God had told him. And think about what David's life had been like. He's running for his life, just scavenging for food, trying to find water wherever he could, living in caves. David knew when he became king, would he ever have to look for food again? No. Would he have to go look for water? No. Would he be sleeping on a cold, dark cave floor? No. I mean, put yourself emotionally into this place. David knew he was going to be king, and he's running for his life. And all of a sudden, Saul was there, and Saul didn't know that David was. Think about this moment. And David's men, his men, the men that chose loyalty to David over King Saul, David's men who were giving up their life to fight for David. David's men that knew, they knew, that the moment David would become king, their loyalty to David, well, David would return that loyalty back tenfold. David's men looked at David and they said, this is the day the Lord spoke of when he said, I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish. Now, what's interesting here, they put a lot of God talk in this, but we can't find God saying this in the Bible at all. Think about it this way. If you've been around church people at all, have you ever heard someone say, maybe you've said this, I've done this before, by the way, I'm guilty. Have you ever heard someone say, well, let's just talk about other people. Someone say, well, God would be fine with that decision. And you sit there going, I'm not sure if God would. Have you found yourself praying for someone as you're praying going, oh, there's another side to this prayer that I probably should say, but I feel uncomfortable. You know, every week we pray for people and usually someone personally or someone that they're really close with is dealing with a health issue. And this was a spiritual journey for me because there's two components of the prayer for someone dealing with a health issue. One side is believing, having faith that God is a God who heals. I believe that with all my heart, that God can heal. But there's another side to that prayer, isn't there? Does God heal everyone all the time? No. And at the very beginning of my spiritual journey, it was so difficult for me to pray the other side. It was great to pray the prayer of faith and say, God, you're a healer, God. You can heal anyone. That's great. So much more difficult as you're standing with someone saying, but God, if you don't heal, if you don't, help this person to see what you see. God, if you don't heal, help this person to know that you are with them. God, if you don't heal, leverage this difficult path, this difficult journey to help point people to you. God, if you don't heal. You see, it's easy to say, God speak and make it feel good. Hey, David, this is the moment. God has delivered Saul into your hands. This is the moment, David. But something within David, I think there was a check in his spirit where he's like, but is it? And so David crept towards Saul. And I wonder, what do you think was running through David's mind as he crept towards Saul? Knife in his hand, sword in his hand. What would be going through your mind? The guy that's been trying to kill you. I think David had a lot of thoughts as he crept towards Saul. Saul, I gave you my life and look what you repaid me for. Saul, I went against the great Philistine warrior when you sat comfortably on your backside. Saul, I married your daughter when you said marry her. Saul, I've been a friend to your son. Saul, look at what I've done for you. Saul, I've given everything for you. And look at how you repay me. Look how you treat me. You could almost sense David's heart just beating faster and faster and faster. But then, as he crept, another voice emerged. Another voice started to change the narrative. Another voice that silenced all 600 of his men that said, go kill him. Another voice that started to direct his path. Another voice. When David got to Saul's robe, he cut off the corner of his robe. He could have killed him. If he decided not to. And I think part of the voice in David's mind but something we realize. Right? Every decision we make is a page of our life that's filled with words, that's a story that someone tells. Isn't that true? Every decision. I mean, the small decisions, right, those get ignored, but let's focus on the big decision. Every big decision is why we celebrate big moments of our life, anniversaries, big moments of our life, birthdays, big moments of our lives, right? Every decision we make is a page of our story that gets told. David realizes, at a young age, David realizes. When David went against that great Philistine warrior, that story was told. How David, this small runt of a soldier, courageously killed the fierce warrior. You see, right after he killed him, as they're making their way back, Israelites, the women, wrote a song about David. And they sang this song and danced to this song, and they had instruments, and this is how the song went. Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands, right? This song was the story told about the great King David. And part of the issue with Saul's jealousy and envy towards David was, well, this song that all of Israel sang, because David, right, faced the fierce Goliath, Philistine warrior. And I started thinking about this week. This is where my mind goes. What if David would have killed Saul in the cave while he was going potty? What story would he tell? Think about it. Could you imagine David, all of a sudden he has his small kids running around, and David's now king because he killed Saul while he was going potty. Could you imagine when his kids walked up to him and say, hey, daddy, tell us the story how you became king. Could you imagine when David was now a grandpa and his grandkids came over for Christmas? Hey, grandpa, tell us the story how you became king. Could you imagine the song that they would write about how David became king? I started thinking about the song. Right? What would that song look like? And since I'm such a gifted lyricist, guess what I decided to do? Yeah, you got it. I didn't write the melody. I'm going to ask one of our worship teams to write the melody for the song because I think it's going to be catchy. But this is how I think the song would go. King Saul hunted David relentlessly, so David hid in a cave to save his life. Saul entered to go potty, and David stabbed him with a knife. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'll take it. I'll be here all week. If you want a song written about your life, here we go, right? But could you imagine that song? I think one of those voices, David's like, what story? As David crept closer to Saul to kill him, what story? I think there's this voice saying, David, you're gonna write a story. There's gonna be a piece of paper with words on it. What story do you want told? As David's like, yeah, but King Saul did, and King Saul looked, and King Saul's tried, and King Saul, but what story do you want to be told? Question for you, what story? What story do you want to be told about you? What story is being told? But after David cut the corner of the robe off and started to creep back to his men, we're told that he was conscience-stricken. You see, it's easy at one point to say, yeah, but he didn't kill him. But something, again, as he was creeping back, something entered into his spirit. That voice started to say, hey, but David, that wasn't that innocent. You see, David knew full well what he did. And there's two massive, significant implications to just cutting off the corner of Saul's robe. The first was political. You see, David cutting off the corner of the king's robe signified a change of power from King Saul to David, from Saul's house to David's house. But more significant than that, there was a spiritual implication. Because remember, God's people, the Israelites, had asked for a king. But God was making it clear that he was still leader. And the spiritual implication was now Saul's kingly robe broke the law that's in the Torah. You can read about it in Numbers and Deuteronomy. That his robe was now defiled. And what looks to be innocent, well, David actually claimed the throne for himself. And as he's crawling away, going, yeah, but I didn't kill him. Have you ever been in one of those moments? Sure you have. Have you ever texted someone back and after you sent that text, said, yeah, I could have said so much more, but I didn't. Have you ever walked into a room and you're just so mad at someone and you say something and you walk away and you kind of pat yourself on the back and you're like, yeah, but I could have said so much more. Have you ever made a decision on purpose to hurt someone? I mean, you wouldn't say that out loud, right? That feels, but you know you did. And as you make that decision, you say to yourself, yeah, but I could have done something so much worse. See, we like to rationalize. We like to position saying, I could have said something. I could have done something. I could have replied to. I could have. But look, it could have been worse. And for David, he could have ended his life. And as he was creeping back to his men, he realized that he still made a decision. And he said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master. And get the gravity of this. The Lord's anointed. Or lay my hand on him, for he is the anointed of the Lord. King Saul, the liar, anointed. King Saul, the coward, anointed. King Saul, the one who's trying to end David's life, who, oh, by the way, knew God had anointed David to be the future king. And David still said, no. Yeah, King Saul's evil, and King Saul's jealous, and King Saul's envious, and King Saul's all of this stuff, but God has still anointed King Saul. Who's the King Saul in your life? Who's the King Saul in your life that God just says, yeah, right now, that person is still in your path? Who's the King Saul? Who's the King Saul? We all have them. One, two, a dozen or more. Who's the King Saul? And David realized, oh, God still has Saul on his throne. And David looks at his men and says, none of you will kill him. None of you will end his life. None of you. None of you. But David didn't stop there. David could have stopped there, and Saul at some point would have realized that a corner of his robe was cut off. But David knew he had to own what he did. So David emerges from the cave. Saul's walking away. And David screams out, my Lord, the king. Because David knew he had dishonored Saul, which went against God's plan and his purpose. And not only with his words did he say, my Lord, the king, David throws himself onto the ground, face in the dirt. You talk about vulnerability. David lays there and says, my king, my Lord. And he goes, holding up that piece of his robe. He goes, I spared your life. I could have killed you. I didn't. But I'm now in front of you. I'm humbling myself. I'm begging because you are my king, because God has anointed you as king. You see, divine authority always, always supersedes human authority. Divine authority, God's authority, always trumps human authority. And then David said to King Saul, I'm not guilty, King. You think that I'm rebelling against you, I'm not guilty. You think I'm coming against you, I'm not guilty. If I was guilty, I would have killed you. I'm not guilty. And then Saul, who's now at a distance and he's looking up, and I think he was trying to go, is this really David? Was he really in the cave that I was in? Like, is this really happening? And Saul, overwhelmed with emotion, says, is that your voice, David, my son? And Saul began to weep. And then Saul said to David, I know that you will surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel will be established in your hands. See, we go back to this question. Who is the biggest obstacle in your path? For David, it was Saul. David knew he was going to be king. Saul was. And I think about the answer, which we'll get to in a moment. But think about all the people David could blame. David could have blamed the Israelites that wrote that great song that got Saul so envious. David could have blamed his men. He said, hey, God said, go kill him. God said, go kill him. David could have blamed Saul himself. David could have blamed God. God, you've made a mess of this. You allowed Saul to become king. You tapped me on the shoulder to be the next king, and I'm just waiting. God, you've made a mess. I mean, think about all the people that David could have blamed. Think about the who. He's creating the most tension. How much have you blamed him? Because we as human beings are experts, aren't we, at blaming everyone else. And what David discovered in the cave is the answer. Who's the biggest obstacle in your path? You are. I am. David was. God had said to David, you will be king. Be patient. God had said to David, I have this under control. Yes, even running from your life is part of the chiseling process that David needed to become who God saw him to become. Sometimes God anoints someone in your path. Why? Because God knows what you need. Sometimes God just allows someone or something in your path. Why? Because God has some chiseling to do within you for you to become who God sees you as. Sometimes God just allows all of that to happen. Because God's pursuit isn't our happiness. God's pursuit is our obedience. You see, the obstacle in your path just might be the opportunity God needs to guide you to your purpose. Instead of taking it into your own hands, maybe you just say, okay, God, I don't understand why you've anointed a Saul in my life. But God, I'm going to trust you. So, what can we learn from David's story? And this can change the course of your entire year. When there's an obstacle in your way, a what or a who, and that obstacle has tension, that obstacle has pain, that obstacle is creating discomfort, you know. What we want to immediately do, we all want to do this, right? When there's pain, when there's tension, right? We want to move into action, don't we? Some of you love to run into that pain. That's just your personality. Some of you love to run away from it. But what we want to do immediately, right? When you get that text message, what do you want to do as you take out all your anger on your cell phone? You're like typing it, oh, right? You want to hit send, right? When you get that email, when you get that look from that person, when your boss makes that decision, when your employee makes that decision, when you, right? You know what that is, right? When that discomfort, that pain, right? We don't want to live in that pain and we want to give that pain back. We want to move into action. But something was forced upon David that we got to learn from. You see, the action should be, well, one of the last things we go to. What happened when David had to creep towards Saul? He slowed it all down. It paused the action, didn't it? We don't know how long it took him to creep up, but there was enough distance for 600 men. I mean, us guys are pretty loud creatures. I could be the softest in the morning at 5 a.m. walking through the house, and I know my wife is right. I'm like a herd of elephants going through the house, right? No matter how soft I try to walk through the house, she's like, you're just so loud. I'm like, that's true. 600 men, they had to be a distance back. And the creeping, slowly walking, every step to not kick over a rock, every step not to twist an ankle, every step. It allowed the action to pause. And when you pause, listen. David had 600 guys saying, kill him, God said. But in the quiet, what voice started to emerge within David? Nah. David, Saul might deserve it, but I'm judge over Saul. Hey, David, yeah, he's hurt you, but don't repay that. Hey, David, this is not yours to take control of. You need to follow me. Hey, David, what story do you want told? Hey, David, some guy named Chris might write a song about you killing King Saul after he's gone potty. You don't want that guy to do that, right? What story do you want told? You see, when we pause, because that pain, those emotion, that tension, right? It envelops us, doesn't it? And we want to respond. And what story emerges when we respond like that? We all know that. We've all done it. It's a moment like, why did I? Why did I? And as David crept back to his guys, he had more time to pause. To go, I got to tell my guys that God anointed Saul. I have to tell my guys that God's in the midst of this and we need to follow him. I got to tell my guys that God's anointed Saul and we are going to keep our eyes on our divine authority, God. But God has given human authority to Saul. I got to tell my guys not to kill him. After David told his guys this, you think about the pause. And I'm sure 600 guys didn't all agree with David. 600 guys that wanted to end Saul's life. But then David walked to the edge of the cave. You see, so many times, even if we put the pause and listen in place, we still want to run. And last week, we looked at Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10. For we are God's workmanship, his handiwork, his masterpiece, created in Christ Jesus to be brand new, for, which is purpose, good works. Good works, loving people by serving people to Jesus. It's what we're created for. But at the very end, it says, for us to walk in them. Not run, but to walk. You see, we got to slow down. Because when we're running down our path, we just get ahead of God. And when we get ahead of God, we can't see God. We take our eyes off of God. And guess who becomes our own king? We do. Maybe you're killing the pause and the listen. I mean, you're owning that. You're like, yeah, maybe, just maybe, instead of running, you need to start walking. So as God shifts, you shift with him. As God moves, you move with him. As God slows down, you slow down with him. As God says, the Saul in your life, I put her. I'm allowing it to happen. Just maybe. As you move into action, you'll do so in a pace where it's a lot easier to pause and a lot easier to listen. So, it's a statement that we're anchoring this entire series to. Before you do, focus on who? You. We gotta focus on ourselves. We got to. We're the biggest obstacle in our path. We want to blame everyone else. I'm just saying. We are. In part one, I made up a word in part one. And the word was whoing, which is a great word. Hopefully you all will continue to use it. That whoing requires doing. That who you're becoming requires action, movement. My hope, my prayer for all of you is this week, you pause, you listen. You pause, you listen. You pause, you listen. And remember, every decision you make is a page in a story that is being told, about you. Just pray. Lord, there's so much to learn from the life of David. So much to learn in this one small moment. And I know to pause and I know to listen are two words that are easy to throw up on a screen to say out loud is a whole nother thing. When that tension is real, when that obstacle is real, that name of that person, the names of those people, and the pain and the hurt that they're causing, the betrayal, the lying, the lack of integrity, when all of that's real, when we can see the faces of those people, when the obstacle is that massive and the tension is that great, it's a whole nother thing to pause and listen. But Lord, it's in those moments. It's in those moments when we pause. It's in those moments where we hear your voice to guide, to direct. It's in those moments where we trust you to guide our path. In your name I pray. Amen.